As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Analysis and opinion so honest, it's just a matter of time before they get themselves in trouble. Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Trying to get good pitches, put good swings on it, battling with the shoulder at times and trying to gut it out and give everything I have. And tonight it was enough to, you know, help us get a win.
Yeah, it certainly was enough to help the Blue Jays get a win. A much needed win. Welcome to Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360. Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker, the Toronto Blue Jays, 11-8 winners Game 3 of the American League Championship Series at the Rogers Center. Game 4 goes today. First pitch at 4:07. Chris Young for the Royals, R.A. Dickey for the Blue Jays. And it was almost like two games, Kevin. I mean, the Jays, well, the game starts off with Elcides Escobar tripling, and the ball falls in front of Jose Bautista, and we're going, oh, God, here we go again. I mean, you could just hear the gears going. And then Kevin Pillar on Lorenzo Cain. I'm going to call it right now, first inning. I think it's a game-saving catch. I'm going to say that. It's 1-0, but Lorenzo Cain, if he doesn't get that ball, Lorenzo Cain's on second or third because he's flying.
I think it was an attitude changer to me. I think it helped his team a lot, changed the attitude, the feel around that game. I think that was...
It really brought the crowd back into the game. And look, I said going into the game, we talked about this. I'm going to give Toronto fans credit. I'm going to just diverge a little bit here because Toronto fans get hammered all the time for being boring, for sitting on their ass, for you know, needing the scoreboard to get them into games. And a lot of that comes from sort of the traditional view of Toronto hockey fans, very corporate, very dull, in some ways reflective of the team that they watch. And I'm one of those people. I've always said I think, quote unquote, the effect of fans on a sporting event is way overstated. Give me the most talented team, and I don't care if I don't care how many fans are screaming at me. If I've got the most talented team, I'm going to win. The Yankees kept winning, and nobody liked the Yankees. They go into places where everybody was piling the hate on, and the Yankees kept winning. But I got to tell you what I saw last night, what I've seen from Toronto baseball fans, that meltdown by the Texas Rangers. I'm absolutely convinced a lot of that had to do with the environment. And then last night, Johnny Cueto, as we saw in Pittsburgh a couple of years ago, just not up to it. Just not up to it when the crowd gets on him. The crowd was... I've been going to the Rogers Center for 15 years. I have not heard a crowd at the Rogers Center as loud as it was when they were getting on Johnny Cueto. And I think the crowd deserves a little bit of credit for what happened. What happened with Johnny Cueto yesterday. So I'm just going to, that's a little aside because Toronto fans always get crapped on, and I'm going to, you know, tip my rhetorical cap to Toronto fans.
Anytime you see catcher, pitcher going to the mound, meeting up as many times as it was between Cueto and Salvador Perez, something's going on. It's either they, and you even say a couple of times you saw Cueto have to really lean in to even hear what Perez was saying. Yeah, it has a lot to do with it.
Harold Reynolds on Fox made a point that really stuck with me. He said very early, he said, I just think these guys are overthinking what they have to do.
Yeah,
Salvador Perez and Johnny Cueto, I think they're overthinking what they have to do.
But I think the approaches for the Blue Jays are a lot better at home. I know they know, and you know, me playing here too and taking batting practice and excuse me, all you have to do is be direct to the baseball. Line to line, you have a chance of leaving the yard and hitting a ball hard and having a good result. And I think the Blue Jays are very comfortable doing that. Excuse me. Cueto early on couldn't throw the ball away for a strike. And that was been the MO for the Kansas City Royals the first two games as they wanted to get the Blue Jays out of way. Cueto couldn't do that early. And when you Blue Jays, you can't throw strike one away early to set them up to get them out of way because you want to go away and then bust them in and then go away to get them out. When you're falling behind 1-0 to a team like that, bad things are going to happen. That's what happened to Cueto.
So many things I want to talk about with this game, so we're just going to get at it. We're going to be joined by Sal Butera.
Great guy.
Blue Jays coach. And Well, his son Drew is catching for the Royals, which has got to be really cool. And you know, if
for his wife, it's a little hard, huh? Who do you root for?
I don't know. Whoever's winning.
Hey, you know.
Whoever's closest to the ring, is who you cheer for. We'll be joined by Sal Buterra in a couple of minutes. But as I said, so much to get to. Let's just start. We talked about Johnny Cueto, and I want to get to Troy Tulowitzki and Ryan Goins and Kevin Pillar, of course. Mm-hmm. But let's stick with Johnny Cueto for a moment. Coming into the game, all the talk was about how this guy was going to do stuff to try to mess up the timing of the Blue Jays hitter. I mean, he'll throw from a slide step. Use a slide step with nobody on base. You know all about the shimmy, the little ass wiggle,
right.
The delay.
Mm-hmm.
He quick pitches. He's got a whole variety of tricks. We saw that, I thought, in the first inning with Revere, Donaldson, Batista, and Edwin. But then when they got him in the stretch in the second inning, when Troy Tulowitzki gets that single, he's a different guy. What did you see from Johnny Cueto when he was in the
stretch? Well, first of all, he wasn't throwing strike one. That's the most important pitch in baseball. But it gets back to what you said. When
you can't do that in the stretch.
He can't. Well, yeah, obviously you don't want to do all that because it's time consuming. You want to be quicker to the plate. It takes you out of your element. That's how, you know, he relies a lot on deception, meaning all of that stuff he does before the ball, he releases the ball gets in his zone or wherever that is. You know, once you get him out of that, it's a lot tougher for him to throw strikes, and he wasn't bearing down and didn't have an approach. The approach was, you know, you saw him in his last start when he was going mowing through all the Astros hitters. It was because he was out of the windup, and he got it really involved in all the shimmy shaking and the quick pitching and all the little movements, because the Astros have a lot of parts of their swing. So the Blue Jays. And when you can do all of these things, it adds a different element. It gives you a little bit easier way to finagle your way through a lineup. Get him in the stretch, he can't do that. Then he just basically is, you know, right to the base, right to the plate, over the top, not a whole lot to him. Guys can go through their normal windups at the plate. And, you know, to me, all it was is the Blue Jays zoned him in, meaning they got him on the plate. They weren't going off the plate to swing at balls. And when you do that as an added on to talent with the Blue Jays, bad things are going to happen to an opposing pitcher, and that's what happened in the second inning and the third inning.
The game by Tulowitzki, we've got to talk about this. We know about the shoulder injury, the fracture. We were told very clearly it was going to bother him at the plate more than in the field. I think we've seen that. We've seen evidence mm-hmm. of that. But you made the point that even before the home run yesterday, we started to see a little better contact from Tulowitzki. I guess the difference is yesterday you saw that swing you used to see from start to finish. Because I got to think that the hardest thing when you have that type of injury, it's not just swinging the bat. It's not so much swinging the bat as finishing the swing. That's right. Where, and Troy said, that's where the problem mm-hmm. is finishing the swing. But what did you see yesterday? Because he had a couple of real good hacks, even before he hit that home run. He had a couple of real good hacks. And he looked to me, I thought going back to game two, there were signs that he was starting to put the barrel on the ball a little bit.
Well, I understand whenever he talked after the game, it sounded like he's not 100%. But at the plate, he looks like he's getting closer to 100% to me. He's aggressive in the strike zone. I know early on when he first got here, he would take center cut pitches. He would take strikes instead of swinging at him, being aggressive early in counts. Now he's not doing that. Now he's going to the plate. He's hunting a strike. When he gets it, he's putting it in play. I think that's the name of the game. When you have a power guy that's supposed to drive in runs and supposed to hit home runs, well, he has to do that. He has to feed off a fastball, and now he's hitting the fastball. He got the first hit fastball in the second inning to lead off that, to get that big rally started, and then he hits the three-run homer off a fastball. It's on the fastball up. When you get fastballs and you go up hunting them and then you start putting them in play, you know he's confident now. That's what I see. He's more confident. He's aggressive through the strike zone, meaning I see it out of the hand. When it's in the strike zone, I'm very aggressive with my swing, and I put it in play. You see Kansas City, every time, most of the time when they swing at a ball, They put it in play. That's the name of the game. You don't waste a whole lot of swings. It's authority. I don't go up trying to set people up by fouling a ball way off. Why do that? It's the playoffs. God knows what you can do, what you can't do. Go up with authority. Get a good pitch to hit. If you're looking for that zone, when you swing at it, put it in play, and now he's doing that.
The bottom of the order, 5 runs scored. Kevin Pillar, a double. Russ Martin, a walk. And ended up scoring a run. Ryan Goins, a terrific game. 2-run double and a solo home run with 2 out. And in many ways, Ryan Goins kind of kick-started this thing because the Jays have had runners on base throughout the series and haven't been able to cash it in. And
5 for 11 last night.
Yeah, and here comes Ryan Goins in the second inning with the hit that kind of makes you think, okay, this is going to be a little different. After Kevin Pillar still second. Another thing really to talk about.
Standing up.
But I don't
weird,
know, was that, I don't know if that's a crowd thing or that's just, you know. I
think that gets back to Cueto not knowing what's going on and more worried about. You know, what he's hearing. I think that had a lot to do with it.
Yeah, and you know, he's got Ryan Goins at the plate. I mean, no disrespect to Ryan Goins because of where we're going to go in the show. No disrespect to Ryan Goins. But if I'm Johnny Cueto, I'm focusing on trying to get Ryan Goins out. But anyhow, Ryan Goins with big double. And you know, Kevin, we've talked a lot about Ryan Goins' defense, about the adjustment he made as a hitter, the change he made in his stance as a hitter, resting the bat in his shoulders, trying to simplify his swing and his approach at the plate because Eric Owens and Brooke Jacoby, the two hitting coaches of the Blue Jays, said, look, if you're going to be a utility player, one of the things you got to do is simplify your swing because you don't want to be one of those guys that needs to tinker because you're just not going to get – you're not going to get as much time in the cage if you're a utility guy as the regular guy. So simplify your swing. But we've seen this kid develop in front of our eyes into – a guy that I think a lot of people are now looking at possibly being an everyday player. But what I liked last night, you know, one of the things Jose Bautista does, and we've always talked about this, Kevin, is, you know, you create a storm and you end up having your best games usually as a result of that. You play well angry. You know, Ryan Goins a little different. Spotlight was on him. He didn't ask for it. It came on him after that mistake in game 2. And I think most people would say that it stayed on him a little longer than it should because of Jose Bautista. But he comes out and has a game like that. You want to talk about the sense of a moment and a type of game that could really launch a guy's career. That could be it.
Well, that could be a career launcher. You think it's funny that a guy simplified his swing that was hitting off of Cueto that does all of these things to go against that, meaning the guys that struggle with a guy with all the parts that face Cueto, the one guy that doesn't have all those parts, Ryan Goins, had a huge game. You know, he had that 9-pitch at bat where he got the breaking ball hit to left field. You know, I think the word's out that Ryan Goins can hit a fastball now. He simplified it enough. We saw it in the Texas series where he wasn't getting a lot of fastballs. He was getting a lot of breaking balls and a lot of weird counts, 0-0, 2-1. Well, that's not normal breaking ball counts for Ryan Goins. And, you know, he's made the adjustment in this series. You see that. He's taking that breaking ball to left field. Means he's getting it deeper. He was fouling the fastball off. To me, it was like he was saying, I'm going to foul the fastball off till I can get a good breaking ball to hit, and I'm going to try to go middle the other way with it. Well, he's watching Kansas City. Kansas City does the exact same thing. Why wouldn't it carry over to a guy like Ryan Goins? And, you know, he's evolving. What he does on the defensive side of the ball, he changes the game. We saw it last night, the plays he was making up the middle. Even when Tulowitzki got thrown out of the game, the play at shortstop, he almost got the guy at first base, the great play between the hole, third and short. He makes those plays look easy. Now it's just doing enough on the offensive side of the ball, and he's evolving. Just the little adjustment, trying to hit the breaking ball, foul the fastball off to get to the breaking ball. You know, it's nice to watch a guy like that do that.
And, you know, we just can't say enough about the bottom of the order. As Kevin Pillar said yesterday, and he's made the point often, you know, both he and Ryan are used to hitting at the top of the order, either wherever they were in the minors. They're kind of, as he said, we're kind of top of the order guys in the minors. So we've just kind of taken that approach down here.
Well, it'd be 3-0 without 6, 7, 8, and 9. They had 7 RBIs with 7 runs scored. You know, that basically you need – everybody's focused on the top 4 or 5 guys in that lineup. Back into that lineup, We'll add Troy Tulowitzki into that because he hasn't been hitting. What was he, 3 for 23 coming into the game? He had been a little bit hotter. I think he was 3 for 4 after the 3 for 23. So now he's starting to hit the fastball. But up until last night with the big 3-run homer, you could add him to the mix. Those back end of that lineup's got to step up big. It's going to be no different today. They're going to have to do something special to beat this team, because Kansas City's just going to keep coming after you. They do little things. They're like little pests on the at the plate. They just keep hitting and keep hitting and keep hitting and keep hitting. Keep putting a guy in the stretch, which we all know it's a little bit harder for a guy to concentrate, throw strikes, throw harder from the stretch than it is to wind up.
This may be the one guy today going for the Blue Jays, Ari Dickey. You don't care if he doesn't care if he's in the stretch. He does a great job holding base runners to begin with, and
he does. But this may be another thing where they put runners in motion. They hit and run more. They do little things. It's, you know, the Blue Jays are going to have to play a perfect game like they did last night. Last night was a perfect game. Today's going to have to be the same. They're going to have to score a lot of runs. You said it on your show earlier. It may be a 10-12 run game again for the Blue Jays. You know, you have the best offense. The best offense is going to have to show up again.
One of the cool stories in the American League Championship Series is the Butera family story. Now, we've seen instances where father and sons have competed or been in the different dugouts before. In the 1998 ALDS, for example, Mel Stottlemyer was the Yankees pitching coach. Todd Stottlemyer was with the Texas Rangers in the 1998 Division Series. Well, in this series, Drew Butera is the Kansas City Royals backup catcher. His dad, Sal, coaches for the Blue Jays. He's an assistant coach, catching coach. He has served in the past as a scout with the organization as well, former Major League catcher who has a World Series ring from the 1987 Minnesota Twins. Now his son, Drew, is attempting to add to the family jewelry collection. We're very pleased to be joined by Sal Butera. So, Sal, thank you very much for doing this. How much conversation have you and Drew had during this series?
Oh, we speak every day. Actually, we had lunch yesterday. And, it's a father-son relationship, but it's very little baseball, as you can well imagine, Jeff.
Tell me a little bit about Drew. We had him on the show. We had him on the show last year when he I believe it was last year when he pitched, when he came in to pitch. I believe it was for the Dodgers when they were getting shelled. Correct. Tell us a little bit about Drew, because you know I talked to some of the Kansas City Royals people and other people around baseball, and Sal, you know how people talk in baseball, and they all talk about what a great teammate this guy is, and not only that, he's got some skills too.
Yeah, he's a young man who was very small at a young age and was a shortstop in high school. Went to college as an undersized catcher, converted type catcher, and then grew 6 inches and put on 35 pounds between his freshman and sophomore years, and put himself on the map. Got drafted by the Mets, got traded twice, and now he's with the Kansas City Royals. And I think this is his sixth year in the major leagues, and has really carved out a nice niche for himself.
Sal, you've been around catching. You know a lot about catching. Kansas City puts a lot of pressure. Excuse me, puts a lot of pressure on defenses. They put a lot of pressure on a pitcher. But I think we forget a little bit of how much pressure they put on a catcher. Is there anything a catcher can do in game against a team like Kansas City, whether it be, you know, bouncing balls in front of the plate, trying to set guys up? Is there anything you can do against a team like Kansas City to throw off 1 through 9, make it a little bit harder for them to be aggressive in the zone?
Well, in this day and age, with all the scouting reports and information and video that you have, with their type of team, they're a contact-based type team. They put the ball in play. They battle extremely hard in their at-bats, and you really have to mix. You have to follow a game plan, but then you have to make adjustments in-game to see who is sitting on certain pitches. The situation usually dictates that, Kevin, and what you do. You try to take the pitcher's strengths and see what he's doing at a given time, and then adjust periodically. They're a much tougher team because they do put the ball in play, and they – and they will take the ball the other way, as opposed to a free swinging team that, you know, is either pull oriented or a power team that, you know, swings for the fences. You really have to be on your toes. You have to really scrutinize the opposition, as well as, you know, again, the pitcher's strengths really dictate what you do.
You know, Sal, I'm wondering, you said when you guys get together and you have lunch and you talk about, you sort of avoid talking about baseball, about baseball things, at least as far as the series goes, as far as this particular matchup goes. I'm just wondering how Gina, how Drew's mom and how Alex's sister, how they've approached this. Have they split it up and, you know, said, look, one can cheer for dad and the other can cheer for Drew, or how are they going about viewing this series?
My wife has been with me for 35 years, and she has seen all the highs and lows. She's been obviously in the business for a long, long time, and then she's had to do the same thing a second time with my son. My daughter was an athlete at University of Alabama soccer. So we're an athletic family. She cheers for both of us, obviously, if he's in the game. I think the good part, Jeff, is the fact that, you know, he's the backup catcher behind Perez. So he's not impacting the game on a daily basis, which makes it easier for me because, you know, obviously when he's in there, I want him to do well. Certainly I want us to win. Mm-hmm. There's no love laws between our allegiances as far as he wants to win, and so do I. You know, I'm a Blue Jay. He's a Royal. And at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, one of us will be in the World Series. And I think that's how my wife approaches it, that she knows that she's going to the World Series regardless of who wins.
She's going to have good seats regardless.
That's true. That's very true. It's a great relationship. My son is really my buddy. We hang out all the time together. He lives 15 minutes away from me in Florida in the off season. We're constantly talking about the game, and you hit the nail on the head. He's a wonderful, wonderful teammate. He's a good player. He's a good defensive catcher who I still think has the ability to hit. Unfortunately, when you're playing behind a guy like Salvador Perez, you're not going to get a whole lot of opportunity. Albeit said, when he does, he's done a good job for them. He's fit the role that he's put into, and it's a very valuable role. You look at what we've accomplished here with Martin and Navarro. I mean, it's a great combination. They feed off each other. We have a great working situation. I'm sure theirs is the same way over there. So from the standpoint, it's like having two good quarterbacks on a football team. The top quarterback, you know, you always see, but that backup quarterback got to be ready in case the front guy goes down. And in order to be a championship team, you have to have two good ones.
You know, Sal, one of the things that has always kind of amazed me and impressed me about guys who can have a career as a backup catcher, and I've talked to Siddle about this. You know, all you have to do is spend some time in spring training, and you know that the workload is different for a guy who's the number one catcher in spring training and the guy who's a number two or a number three catcher, a guy who's going to be the catcher at AAA. I mean, you know who's going to get, for the most part, if somebody decides they need an extra bullpen session, you know where the call's going to go. You know who the guy will be behind the plate. But what does it take? You know, you can last in the game as a good pinch hitter, and you can have a pretty good career as a good pinch hitter and as a utility guy. But what does it take to have, you know, a multiple-year career as a guy who was primarily a catcher? I mean, you played what? You had a 9-year major league career with, I believe, 5 different teams. What does it take to be able to do that? What does it take to be able to do that?
You hit the nail on the head. The backup catcher actually has to work harder than the frontline guy, in the sense that you have to study video more, because your opportunities, you don't know when you're going to get that opportunity. So you have to be on par with, in this day and age, 12 and sometimes 13 pitchers on a staff. You have to know how each one operates. When you get in the game, your main focus is them, because you know from the offensive standpoint, playing once a week, you're not going to have the timing that like the frontline guy normally does, playing, say, 4 to 5, 6 games a week. So it's much tougher in that role. You have to keep yourself in good physical shape. And when you're not playing every day, you have to work that much harder to keep your skills honed in. You wind up throwing to the bases usually 2 to 3 times a week. You're taking extra batting practice to make sure your timing is good. You're catching guys in the bullpen because you want to stay sharp with them. You're catching them starting pitchers side work to make sure you're in sync with them. So it's the workload, even though you don't see it in the game sessions, it's actually twice as much as that number one guy does, because you have to be ready when your name is called, and sometimes you never really know that. Some managers are good. Gibby's good here. He'll let either Martin or Navarro know when they're getting a day off or when they're playing, so that they can prepare. And good managers usually do that. But in some cases, if the frontline guy shows up one day and he's a little sore, he's a little beat up, you might be in the lineup, and you better be ready, because that's part of your job. So it's a very difficult role. It takes a certain mentality. It takes a certain discipline. It takes a unique skill set in that role, because a backup outfielder or a backup infielder can take ground balls every day or take fly balls. But as a catcher, it's very hard to duplicate what you do in a game. So you have to put yourself in that kind of position and try to simulate some action that's going to allow you, so that when you get in the game and there's a man on first base, that your timing behind the plate when you go to front is in sync. There's a lot of facets of the position, and that's why when you have a guy like a Ross with the Cubs, or say a good backup, they last a long time if they keep themselves in good shape, because their value is immense on a particular team.
Sal, me and Jeff have had serious conversations about the three catchers catching R.A. Dickey, how hard it is. Obviously, with Russell Martin behind the plate, it makes the Blue Jays a better team. Has there been any conversations between you and Russell about how to catch it, how to catch the knuckleball, even how to go to a knee? He's changed his stance behind the plate. He's going to a knee. And to further that, will you have any more conversations about today's game? Because, Kansas City's a different team. You mentioned it. They pull a lot of balls in play. Is there any conversation you'd have with Russell today on how to attack that, maybe throwing more fastballs, maybe mixing in a slow breaking ball? I know to maybe go outside the box a little bit. Will you have any conversations like that?
Well, let me answer the first question. We started, I was the catching coordinator or catching instructor in spring training for the entire spring, and I had the good fortune to catch Joe Niekro in my career. So when Russ started catching R.A., we tried to come up with a style that would suit him. And he varied a few things in spring training. I showed him about how an easy position to hold the glove in a relaxed position, because initially it was very demanding on his shoulders and his arm, keeping his arm up like a regular target would with a regular pitcher. So he's actually modified it two or three times, and now he's come up with a very comfortable one-knee approach. It works for him. Everybody's different. Tolley has his own style of catching R.A. So it started then, and it's kind of mushroomed to this point right now. As far as today's game, R.A. does a great job of holding runners. He's very quick to the plate. He's got a very good move to first base. He does a great job. If you look at his history, his stolen base percentage against him is very, very low. Matter of fact, they don't attempt many stolen bases. Mm-hmm. So from that aspect, our game plan today will be almost like every game plan. R.A. Game plan is his game, depending on the lineup in their past numbers against him, and he'll pitch accordingly. But again, the knuckleball is an exact science. You don't know what's going to happen on pitch to pitch. Weather conditions obviously today won't affect it because we're inside. So you'll have a very, very constant condition. Joe Niekro liked the same way. He liked to pitch indoors. He pitched in the Metrodome. So it was a very, you saw the same facet of the ball every time. The weather didn't affect his pitch. Today it's all going to be about how R.A. feels and how many strikes he throws, who the umpire behind the plate is. How much experience does he have calling a knuckleball? Because not everybody has that same feel for that particular pitch. I believe it's Hunter Wendelstedt today, who I'm sure has seen R.A. in the past. As far as Russ calling a game, he'll basically dictate off the knuckleball. How the knuckleball is working will impact the fastball that he throws and the cutter he throws and the curveball he throws. He'll vary his stuff and his changeup and so forth. He mixes up other pitches at different times depending on counts, the score. That will dictate what he does. But as far as the game plan, we have that set down before we even go out there. And then again, the catcher adjusts as he goes along.
Sal, listen, it was great of you to join us today. It's a fun story. However, it turns out, I know that the Butera family is, we know that you'll have more baseball to watch in the next round. And one of you will be in the World Series, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. I mean, obviously, I'm rooting for us. You know, he can get his ring at some other year.
Or you can loan him yours if you win it this year. If he wants to wear it, you can loan him yours, and that probably wouldn't work.
Well, that's a real sore subject in our family, because whenever he thinks he gets too high or gets a little bit too mighty for his own bridges, I just pull out the ring and I said, "Hey, you haven't got one of these yet." So I hold that edge over in that aspect. But listen, it's a great story. I feel truly blessed. This is a very unique and unusual situation, but it's one that, you know, he's with a good team. We have a good team. And you know what? I was really pulling for them to do well, and he was pulling for us to do well. As a matter of fact, there's a little sidebar to it. He was sitting in the clubhouse watching our game before his game one day, and when Batista hit the home run, he jumped up in the air and was excited, and his teammates looked around and looked at him like, what are you doing? So he's pulling for us the same way in that respect. But obviously, when he crosses the line, he's doing his job for the Kansas City Royals, and certainly when I do my job, I'm doing my job for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Sal, listen, it's great of you to do this. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Sal.
Take care, man.
My pleasure, Jeff. Kevin, good to see you. Good talking.
Sal Butera.
He's the best.
He is so much fun to talk to around the batting cage at any point. You guys said in Twitter, guys like Sal Butera are the reason you love baseball. I mean, you could just, there are so many good stories. And Sal's, there's something to last in the game for a long time as a backup catcher. I mean, you've talked about, Matt Stairs is with Dean Blundell and Company in the morning show. Is a perfect guy to talk about this as well. Pinch hitting is the hardest thing to do in baseball.
It is.
It's in terms of preparation, environment, all that stuff, it's the hardest thing to do in baseball. And because people don't realize, guys who aren't everyday players, you don't get as much attention as the everyday players. You don't get as much attention in BP. You don't get as much attention when you're taking extra BP.
I've never called a game, but I'm sure backing up, being a backup catcher and trying to call a game would be very hard to do. You know, you're not in sync with the pitchers like a starting catcher is, and you want to put the right fingers down. You have to know a lot about everybody, so when you do get in, it's second nature. You're putting the right fingers down, so I'm sure that's a very hard part of it, too.
I spent day in spring training when I was covering the Montreal Expos. I thought it'd be great to follow Lenny Webster around. And he was more than just a backup catcher, but I thought it'd be kind of great to follow him around to see what his spring training routine is like. I rolled it up at 1:30. I said, "To hell with this, man." Lenny's out going because he's got to catch somebody.
They're catching somebody someplace.
I said, screw this. I'm coming up with another story idea. Lenny, I love you, but man, I'm not hanging around.
Yeah, they're trying to get more play
time. And he's going, "Man, where you going, man?" I said, I can't hang around till 4:00. He goes, "Dude, you're going to see this through to the end. You got to be here till 4. And I said, I can't.
Don't be a
this.
Quitter, Jeff.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't keep up with it. Seriously, if you ever want to. You want to know what spring training is about, if you can ever, ever do it, if you go to the minor league complex or something like that, follow one of the minor, try to keep up with one of the minor league backup guys. I mean, you'll be dead by noon. You will be, because those suckers are, I mean, they're going here, somebody's throwing a bullpen, got to go down here, somebody needs a catcher over here. And then in between all that, you got to try to get some swings in the cage. And
if I would have been a backup guy on a minor league team, I think I'd have quit. Like, that's not,
yeah.
It's, I was in a big league camp. Yeah, that's cool, but
yeah, it is difficult. It's Baseball
hard.
Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. We'll be back with more.
Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of the Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, back to Baseball Central. Just ahead of Game 4, the best of 7 American League Championship Series. First pitch at 4 o'clock. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet East Ontario, West, and Pacific. A couple of things you want to deal with out of last night's game, and also look ahead to R.A. Dickey's start for the Blue Jays today. Want to deal with a couple of other things around baseball. The National League Championship Series will continue tonight in Chicago. You can catch that game on Sportsnet. That'll be the Cubs and the Mets. Mets up 2-0 going into Chicago. Kyle Hendricks on the mound for the Cubs. Jacob DeGrom for the Mets. That series is over. The Metsies might sweep that sucker. And again, that first pitch will be at 8 o'clock on Sportsnet, on our Sportsnet TV channels. Daniel Norris, the pitcher who was traded to the Detroit Tigers as part of the David Price deal, of course, a Toronto Blue Jays prospect, kind of a media darling because he lived in a van, and we know the whole Daniel Norris story. He revealed yesterday on his Instagram account that he's being diagnosed with thyroid cancer. Said, a few months ago after I was optioned to AAA, I found out I had a growth in my thyroid, flying back and forth from Toronto to Buffalo after pitching to more and more tests. Done, it was finally concluded the growth is considered malignant. Anyhow, that he says he was assured by doctors that he could finish out the season and then seek treatment for the thyroid cancer. So, you know, our best wishes to Daniel Norris. It appears as if it was caught early enough that he should be okay. But again, Daniel Norris revealing on his Instagram that he's been diagnosed with thyroid cancer. Other news, the Mets are saying that Matt Harvey, who has a triceps, it's not really a strain, it's a triceps injury after getting hit by a ball, he's still preparing to pitch a possible Game 5 in that series. And kind of interesting, Daniel Murphy's emerged as one of the real talking points, one of the real stars of that series. And now the New York media, God bless them, are talking up the possibility of Daniel Murphy joining the Yankees. Right? We want to show you a play from last night's game because it was mentioned a lot in Twitter. And I'm going to credit folks on Twitter for this because it brought it to my attention. And I went and talked to Kevin Pillar after the game. And asked him about this play. Ryan Goins singles him in the second inning. Now watch the end of the slide, and we got it in TV. It looks like Johnny Cueto raises his knee as Pillar slides across home plate and makes contact with him. Now, he didn't see it that well in that replay, but I asked Kevin about it because I heard a couple of his teammates talking about it. I asked him about it last night after the game. He said that he didn't want to comment on it because he hadn't seen the video. He said, I'm going to go and look at it. You're not the first person to mention it to me. We saw it a different angle online. And I got to tell you, at the end of that slide, Johnny Cueto raises his knee and right in Kevin Pillar's chin and the side of his head.
Sure looked like there was intent there to me.
And there's a thing. And the one angle, Troy Tulowitzki says something to Cueto. You can see Tulowitzki, I think it was Tulowitzki had come across ahead of him, yeah. And Tulowitzki, it looks like he says something to Cueto as well. And, you know, I mean, with all the various story angles, all the different story angles in the game, it really didn't necessarily get covered all that much afterwards. But it's something to certainly keep an eye on in the series. And given what we know about Johnny Cueto, who, you know, he'd be a bit of a knob at times. It would entirely be within his character if that was the case. That's character assassination. I can't say that, can I?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
Is it true?
I don't know. But you saw the play. It certainly looked like there was
sure
an intent did. There.
It sure looked, yeah.
I mean, he I wasn't think sticking more, his knee up to stop to help he him was slow
not,
down.
No, it sure looked like there was intent there. You hope not. I mean, you really hope not, but video doesn't lie.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sure what it looked like, and maybe that'll give the Blue Jays more fuel.
There, you can see it right there. Yeah, that's a much, thank you. There's a much better angle. Well, I'll tell you, that looks about as deliberate as you can get.
Yeah, it does, right there. Well, this one, I don't think they show it here.
Yeah, but
in the side view, it does.
Yeah, you can see the knee comes up and makes contact. Yeah, you're right. You hope that isn't the case.
Let's hope
but
not.
It was, and maybe I overstated with Johnny Cueto, but he was not having a good night. He was melting down. The fans were in his grill.
That's no excuse.
As they were in Pittsburgh.
Let's hope that's not the case.
Yeah. And
Will we ever know? Probably not.
Probably not. That's one of those things. I don't expect Kevin Pillar to hold a news conference and say that, you know, I think it was intentional or anything like that.
Well, just thank goodness he didn't hit Kevin Pillar in the face.
Well, and those are the type of things that lead to concussions.
Yeah,
that was my first concern.
He's coming full force into home plate and trying to stop himself. Yeah, you could seriously hurt someone. So let's hope not.
What does R.A. Dickey have to do?
Throw strikes.
Today?
I mean, it's very simple. When he throws strikes, he's dangerous. He's very good. The Blue Jays really need him to go deep in games. I heard you talking on your show earlier, 8 innings. I'm not sure he can go 8 innings, but he's going to have to get him in the 7th. I really believe that, and I think he can do it. Right out the gate, he has to get the feel of that knuckleball. He has to find that slot somehow. usually when he has a good bullpen, talked to Pete Walker numerous times, when his bullpens are good leading up to the game, that means he carries it over to the game. So hopefully he does that, and he's throwing strikes. When that thing's in the strike zone, the knuckleball, it's moving to both sides of the plate. It's very hard to hit. When it's not and they can take it, as good as that Kansas City Royals team is at putting balls in play and not striking out, and, you know, it's going to be tough for them. But hopefully for R.A. Dickey and the Blue Jays, he throws strikes. That's basically, it's real simple. Mm-hmm. Throws it for strikes, he's got a chance. If he doesn't, he walks a couple of guys, he gives up a big hit, you know, gives that team more confidence. That's all they need. It's more confidence, and it's going to be a tough road. But if he doesn't, he throws strikes early, he's got a shot.
Well, I think it's a pretty, you know, this is going to be the biggest start of R.A. Dickey's Blue Jays career.
Hands down.
We know that John Gibbons is managing his way around his bullpen. He's not using his bullpen as much as he's managing his way around it. We know about the Roberto Osuna, the reports of the fingernail situation, whether you want to call it a blister or whatever. Sanchez, a blister. And, you know, look, you got two young guys who are pitching late in the seasons.
Power pitchers.
Yeah. That's
gripping that ball a little bit tighter than they normally do. It's, you know.
Yeah, and so those are two concerns. You know, Liam Hendricks, again, Liam Hendricks hasn't been used for a dog's age.
He won't be used out again. There.
It's the playoffs, and it's pretty clear that right now John Gibbons, I mean, Stephen Brunt uses the line, the circle of trust is Mark Lowe, Aaron Sanchez, and Roberto Osuna, and it may even be whoever the hell isn't a starting pitcher who might be available. That might be a circle of trust, but if R.A. Dickey can give him eight today, that would be massive. And I'll tell you what, I know that John Gibbons doesn't believe that you quote unquote owe somebody something, but this is almost a perfect storm for R.A. Dickey after being taken out of that game in Texas probably a lot sooner than most of us would have done.
What's O mean? Does that mean if he struggles, he's going to let him work his way through it?
I think he's more apt to do that in this game than he would be in the other game.
Does he have a choice?
Yeah. That's what I meant by perfect. Too. You know, it's great for R.A. Dickey. You've got a manager who's, I mean, R.A., he's going to let you go today. You may not ever have a longer leash with John Gibbons as your manager than you're going to have today. I mean, you may not. We know that John Gibbons isn't a fan of the knuckleball. And that's not a personal thing at R.A. Dickey. It just drives, he's a former catcher. It drives him nuts.
So if there's any more pressure on an offense, it's today. They're going to have to score a lot
early
and often.
Score often.
And keep scoring. Don't stop scoring. If it's 20 to nothing in the second,
make it 21
keep scoring.
To nothing.
Because it matters. We saw that last night. It matters. And
the numbers don't lie. This team scores 5 runs, they generally win.
This may be the one guy that doesn't matter if they get in the stretch. He may be the one guy. Mm-hmm. I said Kansas City does that to starters. They try and go middle the other way to get a starting pitcher in the stretch. R.A. Dickey may be the one guy that it doesn't matter, but Blue Jays are going to have to play a perfect game again because I think me and you said it off air. I think we're finally seeing the last 3 games just how good Kansas City is. Mm-hmm. I think it's here. I think we're.
Oh, look! I admit. I thought going into the postseason, the team that really scared me was Texas, and we're going to give Kansas City credit because I thought classic example with Kansas City of a team that wrapped up the division early, knew where they were for the most part, knew they were going to the postseason, pedal off the gas, all that stuff. And I admit I read too much into that. I thought the Texas Rangers are going to be the toughest matchup. Texas isn't a bad team, but this Kansas City offense is just tailor made. It kills you slowly.
Yeah. Stroman, 94 pitches, 3 swing and misses. Yeah. Have you ever seen that? I've never seen that as a player or watching games. They put a lot of pressure on everybody on that team.
Marcus Stroman, God love him, was not fooling a lot of people last night.
He gets swing and misses on the breaking ball. That wasn't happening. Yeah. And when you do that and you have to throw fastballs in this league. Yeah.
So that is it for us. We will be back tomorrow after today's 4th game. Again, of the ALCS, first pitch at 4 o'clock. Tomorrow's game is also a 4:07 first pitch. The Cubs and Mets will be getting the primetime slot. So, for Sal Butera and Kevin Barker, I'm Jeff Blair saying thanks for joining us in Baseball Central. We'll be back tomorrow. 4:07 first pitch, 3 o'clock pregame on Sportsnet East Ontario, West and Pacific, and on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Jays looking to tie the best of 7 series at the Rogers Centre. Have a great day, everybody. enjoy the baseball.